All right. Thank you guys so much for showing up. We have a really good session for you here today. I hope you guys are all having a good day at the event. So the title of our talk here today is Making Better Movies by Making Movies Better. And I really want to sort of talk for a second about the two parts of that statement. Because we have two wonderful speakers here to talk to you about, in some ways, sort of the breakdown between those two. We have Lee Whitminger from Silver Lake Partners. I'll talk a little bit more about him in a second. And we have Guillaume Aubuchon from Cast and Crew and Digital Film Tree. And we're going to be talking about the explosion of content in the industry and why it's such an exciting time for all of us here to be working in this industry. There's just so much going on. There's so much content. There's so much sophistication around that. And he's going to talk about that a little bit. And then we're going to switch over to really the how part of it, of making movies better and the process of doing that. We heard from a couple of our keynote speakers this morning that we shouldn't use the word process. And I actually understand that, and sometimes I would say the same exact thing. But we sort of thought that we should talk about the process to be able to break it down and help get the process out of our way. So we kind of have to own the process first, and then we can decide if we're ever going to use that word again. But first, let's talk about the process a little bit. So we're really going to be looking at it both from the business and the industry side, that's what we can talk about, and then we'll talk about it more from an internal side, and that's what Guillaume's going to talk about. So first, again, we're very lucky to have Lee with us here today. He's down from the Bay Area. He's been at Silver Lake for about 10 years. Silver Lake is one of the largest technology-focused private equity investors in the world. And Lee has a specific focus on the media and entertainment industry and has a lot of really interesting things to say about it. We'll get to hear some of it here, but I'm sure you would value hearing more from Lee at other times as well. So with that, let me hand it over to Lee.
Awesome. Thank you, John. Appreciate the kind intro. Let's see if this thing works. Perfect. So it's great to be here today. I'm excited to chat with you guys about media and entertainment space and Silver Lake's thesis on the industry, as well as how Cast and Crew fits into that. And you know, before I do that, you guys might be wondering what a tech private equity investor is doing standing in LA talking about the media and entertainment industry. And what I would say is that I'm here because we're amidst one of the most interesting and exciting business convergences that I've certainly ever seen, and maybe that all of you have ever seen, and that is the convergence of the technology and media industries. And with it, there's this amazing ascendancy of high-quality premium content that we believe fundamentally will inure, has been inuring the benefit of Cast and Crew, but hopefully also inures to the benefit of all of you. And so I'm going to talk about that today, give you a little bit of history, tell you where we're at, and then Guillaume will talk more about what that means for the day-to-day process of making movies. So maybe just to provide a little bit of historical context. So over the past 20 years, there's essentially been two big forces that have led to the rise in the value of content, particularly high-quality content. The first of those forces has been this revolution in data speeds. And with it, there's been this explosion in connected devices. We all experience this. This allows us to consume content anywhere, anytime, anyhow we like. Now, as a result of that, we're actually all consuming a dramatically higher amount of content. So over the last 17 years, the amount of content that we all consume has literally doubled, which is kind of remarkable to think about. I think there's only 24 hours in the day, and we've literally doubled the amount of content that we consume. So that's the first big driver, huge increase in the amount of content consumed by all of us. The second big driver is there's also been an explosion in the number of channels. And so if you think about the early 80s, there were four big broadcast networks. There were a handful of basic cable channels. Today, there are literally hundreds of basic and premium cable channels, and increasingly, potential players like Netflix. So all of those channels need to fill up those pipes with content. So those two things combined, increasing consumer demand and channels competing for all of our attention, have essentially led to what pundits call the golden age of TV, and essentially an arms race for really high-quality premium content. And so it's no surprise to see that the number of original scripted series, the amount of content spend are all at all-time highs. And the one thing I note about the chart on the right here, and I'll talk about some other elements of this, but this is network content spend. So this doesn't include Netflix. This is none of the OTT guys. This is none of the big technology players. This is just the traditional networks. And that's up 25% over the last 4 years to literally $50 billion. So that's a huge amount of money in aggregate, and it's a dramatic increase as you consider who those people are and why they're doing that. So that's kind of the historical setup in a minute or two, just to kind of bridge you to where we're at today. Why we Silver Lake are so excited about this is we're seeing a lot of these trends accelerate. And with it, incremental disruption and incremental sophistication around how we all consume content and how content gets packaged and distributed to all of us. So to just hit on the consumer piece for a second, so I mentioned the amount of content we've consumed in the last 17 years has essentially doubled. Well, that hides some of the underlying dynamics whereby, believe it or not, we still on average watch about 5 hours of traditional television a day. I think there's probably some skewing there between the people in this room and kind of other folks in the country, but a lot of traditional TV watching. However, over the last 4 years, that's declined by about 10%. And on the other hand, digital consumption over that same period of time is up almost 40%. So huge content consumption, it's increasing, but there's this fundamental shift away from linear and towards digital. So what's driving that? Well, first, obviously, on-demand, things like iTunes have been a huge driver of that. Second, our new digital broadcasters, Netflix is the poster child for that. Some interesting statistics on them. So 2009, they had one original series. Last year, they had over 90 original series. This year, they're going to spend almost $7 billion on content. So $50 billion for all the traditional networks, a new $7 billion coming just from Netflix. If you think about, by the way, that's up 30x over the last 7 years. If you think about their domestic subscriber base, it's over 50 million U.S. subscribers. That's bigger than all of basic cable combined. So given that dynamic, it's not surprising to see some of the more traditional folks not only be spending a lot more money in the last number of years, again, competing for all of our time and attention, but also start to develop their own digital solutions. I think another really interesting dynamic, and if you take a really big step back, and this is what gets Silver Lake so excited, it's not just the traditional linear guys versus the new digital broadcasters and one disrupting and another being disrupted. If you take a step back and widen your aperture in terms of the broader tech and media ecosystem, this whole ecosystem has essentially become this elaborate Game of Thrones where content has essentially been weaponized. And all these folks are using it to attack or defend their respective parts of the value chain. So whether it's the pipe companies, see AT&T's acquisition of Time Warner for $80+ billion, or maybe more close to home for me, some of the big tech players like Amazon spending tons of money on this stuff, we're seeing these trends accelerate and accelerate, and we're seeing the vast majority of these dollars be incremental to all the traditional spend that I alluded to before. So Amazon, I'll just hit on for a second, because I think it's a really interesting case study. A lot of people like to talk about Netflix, I'm gonna talk about Amazon. So Amazon last year spent $1.6 billion on content, which is a huge number. This year they're gonna spend $4.5 billion, which is already 2x what HBO spends in any given year. Furthermore, earlier this year, they bought Thursday Night Football rights for $50 million. They spent 5x what Twitter spent just last year on those same rights. And what's particularly fascinating about what they're doing is they're not selling this content, they're packaging it with their Prime solution. So they're not directly monetizing it, they're attaching it to this free shipping product. Now the reason they're doing that is because e-commerce orders for Prime members are 3x what non-Prime members are. So content for Amazon isn't about monetizing a film or a TV show. It's about driving engagement, it's about driving stickiness, people coming to the platform and interacting with the brand holistically. So as you think about folks like Apple, Facebook, Google, Alibaba, all these companies, what they do is they try and get people to their platform. And so content for them has the same resonance. And so it's no shock to us that Apple is announcing $1 billion on content spend, or even smaller players like Snapchat are saying, hey, we're gonna spend $100 million on content this year. It's all part of this protean battle between these big tech giants and some of the traditional media companies to try and get people's attention. So we see a huge opportunity for not only cast and crew, but everyone who's in this ecosystem as these dollars flow into the space, first and foremost. And Silver Lake, just to put our money where our mouth is, we've been spending billions of dollars, literally, of equity, buying companies that are directly exposed to these trends. So first it was WME, we later bought IMG, merged it into WME, it's now called Endeavor, UFC, our favorite company, Cast and Crew. All of these companies are directly exposed to these trends. And so we are investing very heavily behind this. So in sum, growth in the industry engendered by technology, and with it, greater sophistication. And it's not just sophistication in terms of how we all consume the content, how it all gets packaged, how it gets distributed. We believe, and I think Cast and Crew very much believes, that technology will have to also infuse the production process itself. In order to produce all this content and to do it in a way where the quality standards are met, you're going to need to fundamentally change the way the content gets produced. Furthermore, when you think about a lot of the counterparties now being Amazon and Apple and Google and Facebook, those folks are going to expect that the product and the process is fundamentally different and more tech-centric. So, turn it over to, or back to John, maybe to introduce Guillaume and have him speak to that.
Sure. Thank you. As a great overview, and I think we're all sort of sharing in the excitement that this all brings to the industry. I think it's just a really exciting time, obviously, for all of us. So, as I mentioned earlier, we're sort of going to switch over now and talk about a little bit more of an internal view of sort of like how we actually do this, because all of that stuff has to get made, right? And so that's obviously a lot of what we're talking about here at Mesa Hits today. But we have to keep up with all of this. So how do we keep up with it? We keep up with it by investing internally in how we actually do it. So we have somebody here with us today in Guillaume who has sort of been on all sides of this. He's been in the production on the production side himself within the film industry. He's been on the post-production services side, and he's also been on the software side helping create tools and systems for the production process. So we have somebody who can see this from sort of all sides of it. He's also a really great guy. So with that, let me bring Guillaume Aubuchon up here.
Thank you very much, John. And I know it's been a long day, but I will invigorate you with a description of process. So, every industry is becoming a digital industry. Software, cloud, apps, it's eating all industries. And ultimately, every company must digitize to compete. So, you know, before we look internally, let's look externally. Let's look at what other verticals have done to really meet this challenge. So, just to start off with, let's look at the automotive industry. Now, obviously, with self-driving cars and the car needing to determine who to kill or not kill, that's the sexy side of the automotive industry right now. But what I want to talk about is actually the automotive manufacturing process. So for decades, the automotive manufacturing process has been sped up through robotics and other applications into that process, but that was all about speed. And really what the automotive industry faced was a challenge of lack of innovation. How to address speed, how to deal with increased competition, and the ultimately speed decreasing quality. In finance and insurance, they face a lack of agility problem. So from security to globalization, a lot of agility in software that needed to take place. Ultimately, they faced a consumer problem. Everybody wants their mortgage to be approved quicker. So they really needed to become more agile. Healthcare and pharmaceuticals. Clinical trials, as much of medical, has largely been a paper and people-driven process. So really they faced a problem of a lack of efficiency in their process. All of these challenges in all of these industries can be solved through digitization of assets, automation of processes, and application of a digital workflow. So, if we look at the verticals we were just talking about, so first of all, in the automotive industry, automotive manufacturers are using real-time cloud data to inform the manufacturing process and the usability of vehicles. Each mile driven by cars on the road provides data that improves the process over time. Machine learning in finance and insurance. Financial entities are aggregating data to predict and respond to security threats almost instantly, and like I said, approve your loan more quickly. In healthcare is digitizing the paper process to increase efficiency, reduce error, and correlate patterns in data. And just as an example of this, Novartis is making a $200 million commitment to digitize the clinical trials process. So companies have been turning to ecosystems of software solutions for crunching their data, generating insights, and automating processes. All of these applications are driven by mature industry clouds. So let's just take a look at one example of that with this video from Tesla.
We're utilizing automation to the fullest. We have a variety of robots, from the teeny little ones to huge ones that are able to move the entire body itself. One of the robots that I'm always very impressed to look at is the one that puts the seats inside the Model S. And the same robot is able to change tools, go from a seat handling device to putting the windshield, actually grab the windshield, put some glue around it, and then put the windshield onto the car, as well as do the rear glass of the vehicle. So talk about versatility here.
So robots are cool. That's the takeaway there. Ultimately, they will be our overlords, so prepare for that future. But what's behind it is even more important. What's behind it is algorithms and data and software that drives the efficiency of that process. And whether a process involves robots, grips, wardrobe, transportation, it's the software and data that makes it all happen. That's what we're here to talk about today. So, where is our entertainment cloud? We've been talking about other mature industry clouds. Where is our entertainment cloud? What have we been doing? The answer is largely nothing. But I kid. Motion pictures have actually been born of a 100-year tradition of technological innovation. From the first train that frightened people in silent movie theaters to today, we have continued to innovate. But that's largely been on screen. We've always been striving to have that train be more realistic, to switch to 8K, 26K, whatever's in the future, film to digital. All those transitions are about improving the technology on screen. And we've had little investment in bettering the underlying process that creates that product. So I think one of the things we need to think about is chaos is not the hallmark of creativity. And while this photo may appear chaotic, this is actually the culmination of many calculations and an intricate and organized process underneath it all. And we need to stop holding the creative process in such reverence that we fail to see how it can be changed and how we can get rid of some of that chaos.
In cramped conditions, a PA is forced to copy hundreds of pages in revision sets, rushing them to stage, only to hand them off to another PA, who is now burdened with the unenviable task of delivering script changes to everyone on set. And this is where the cruelest part of script change hell begins. These new pages cause people to completely lose their minds, ripping out pages of their old draft, shoveling in pages of the new draft, painstakingly rewriting notes, and God forbid, trying to figure out which changes even matter to their department. Meanwhile, the writer's PA's gone missing, the set PA's bleeding out from a paper cut, wardrobe's upset because props got the revision before they did, Jimmy doesn't know where page 28 went, a 12-hour day turns into a 14-hour day, and all because legally they had to change a character name from Jane to Jan.
Oh, so sad. It's so true. And it's funny, because it is true. So we need to think about how we think about production. And there is a better way. Production is a process. It's a means of manufacturing a product. If there's any hope of that product turning a profit, we need to look at production for what it is. It's a business. Now, I'm not suggesting that we replace PAs with robots. That's Gas Crew 2025. That's that deck. Merely that digitizing those scripts would free up those same PAs from fighting with those copy, print, and fax machines to do what's most important, which is figure out how to carry 18 cups of coffee and breakfast at the same time. So we need to think of every step of the production process as being a process. So the production process is a meta process, and then we have processes within that process. And from the organization of concepts and ideas to the decision making that goes into greenlighting projects, development of those concepts into full projects, planning those concepts, planning in pre-production, the labor of physical production, monetization of those assets, and ultimately the ROI on those assets, those are all processes within production. All of these individual processes can be improved through efficiency, intelligence, and optimization. So how can we meet this challenge? How can we put more time into creativity and less time into productivity? Well, you know, the first step is admitting you have a problem. And the little known fact is the second step is data aggregation. So what we can do right now is start on the path. And that begins with digitizing and aggregating your assets, and aggregating that into a centralized cloud-based storage solution, which gives us the flexibility to grant access to whoever needs that data, wherever they are in the entire world. So there's no question that data in its aggregation and distribution is critical to the production process. So if we look back at the processes that make up production, and we look at this from a data perspective, and I don't mean to offend any auteurs in the audience, but this is show business and not show art. So we can look at how data can inform all of these processes. Past successes or failures inform decisions about what ideas get greenlit. Development of greenlit ideas is shaped by data intrinsic to the production process. Pre-production is the correlation of data from scripts and other sources into schedules, budgets, and plans for execution. And the execution of physical production itself is led by data and data from previous projects. And ultimately, the monetization of that, of the project itself, is both a creator of data and a user of data. So cast and crew, we're already looking at some of the sub-processes of production to digitize, automate, and optimize. We have digital onboarding with our Start Plus product. We're looking at doing call sheet personalization and making sure the relevant data goes out to you in terms of notifications. And we have digital time tracking with our Hours Plus product. And the story only gets better from there. We are more excited than this guy about the future and where we can go from here. So if we look at machine learning and we look at applications in production, we can really start to begin to understand where the future can lead us. So production intelligence, driven by machine learning, will transform the processes of production. Pattern mining will inform us about the efficacy of past production decisions. Predictive analytics will tell us how these patterns will affect future productions. Information retrieval will grant access to people and determine security factors in terms of what they should have access to. Financial analysis will allow us to better understand our actual production costs and how much of that money really ended up on screen. Visual sensing will revolutionize product placement and compliance. And natural language can tell us how changes affect us as individual departments. So let's just look at one quick example of a script change here. So we have a script, and the script just changed. So I don't know if you've noticed that change. It's a very easy change to miss. So we've just changed from a day scene, and it's now become a night scene. So how can we practically use that in terms of natural language? So we can detect. We can use natural language to obviously identify changes and do deltas between two different versions. We can understand. We can use predictive analytics to look back in time and determine how that script change will affect the production. And we can use pattern mining to understand which departments are affected by that script change and therefore notify them. And if we look at that in terms of people and process, it's not just a script change, it does affect things, practical items in the production. So, you know, the schedule. You know, ADs need to adjust for turnarounds from a split day. It's now a night scene. The budget. The electric department needs an additional lighting package to complete that night scene. The crew list. We need to hire an additional rigging gaffer. He needs to be hired. And the call sheet. And the advance needs to be updated. So all these things are items that can be changed, and we can predict how they need to be changed and help people do their jobs more effectively. So let's just look at the key takeaways here. If digitizing and standardizing process seems anathema to creativity, it's not. Remember that a painter is more effective when he doesn't have to grind his own pigment. So you're not sacrificing creativity. Efficiency breeds creativity. We need to think about production as a business process. And not only do we need to think about production as a business process, we need to think about it as an increasingly digital process. And right now, we need to start working on a strategy for ingesting, centralizing, and accessing your data. And that's what we're really doing at Cast & Crew. We're helping our clients do that day in and day out. And ultimately, we need to make better movies by making movies better. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Guillaume. Thank you, Lee. So we're going to take some questions now. I have some questions, but I'd rather hear some of your questions first. So, yeah, in the back.
So, you know, there are different people that are trying to tackle this challenge, but I wonder in your experience of talking to studios and stuff, what kind of the adoption, some of the challenges of adoption, because, you know, producers or production managers, production people, they've been doing this a long time, right? And they've got, you know, the way they operate, the contracts, they know who to hire and all that stuff, and the interns that they bring on, and they all operate in a certain way. What has been some of the feedback or the pushback that you might have gotten in trying to adopt this kind of process?
I'll take that first. I'm sure you have plenty to add as well. I think there's a lot of friction. I think we would be kidding ourselves if we said, like, hey, the technology exists, just go use it. I mean, I think all of us know that that's a very unreasonable way to look at it. And I do think that there's some unique things about production that makes it hard. It's what I call demand-side friction. It makes it hard to put in place the things that you know deep down you want. Because we hear from every one of our customers, we want to go digital, we want to get rid of the paper. Everyone agrees with that. But where it gets hard is, there's a few things that I attribute it to, and I'm interested to hear from others too. One is just the nature of production being a pop-up concept, meaning that, I mean, typically it's a little different between different types of production, film and TV and other formats, but I think that you set up, you're under a ton of time pressure and budget pressure, and you gotta get it filmed and be done. And that's a hard environment for change management, for adoption of new processes, adoption of new concepts, adoption of new technology. So I think it is a challenging environment. So what we always say to our customers is, let's pick the ones where there's less friction there. So maybe filming out in the desert on a really short timeline isn't a good place to do it, or something like that. Or just a place where there's production team or cast or crew that is just sort of more ready for these types of things. Like anything else, early adopter dynamics exist. So I think that we're seeing a real tipping point in terms of that demand getting real. People aren't just talking about it. We are hearing and we are working with our customers on a lot of this stuff that Guillaume was just talking about. So I think it's very real, but I still think there's a bunch of friction there. And I think that our recommendation for studios is get going now, but let's work together to pick out the right places to.
So you guys are actually go out on set and actually work in the environment that they're to, you know, a production?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. We
absolutely do. And there's other parts of this also. I mean, some of the things that Guillaume was talking about, I'll let him speak to it, about sort of starting to ingest and centralize your data. Some of that isn't just about working with providers like Cast and Crew. Those are some things that, and I think there are a number of studios that have been for a while starting to think that way, as well as independents and others. But so I think that's something that you don't necessarily just have to rely on someone like us to do. I think that's something you can start thinking about internally.
Yeah, and I think the other aspect to that, we're trying to augment the human process. So while there is, obviously, as John said, there is friction to adoption, you know, what we're trying to do is make it easier and more efficient on the end user. So, you know, I think if you can prove to people that we're making their lives easier, then that path to adoption becomes an easier course. So, you know, I think we're trying to both be respectful of the process as it currently exists, and sort of lead a little bit into the future about how it can be more efficient.
Yeah, every time we've seen a customer go digital, they're pretty darn happy about it. So I think that it's one of those things, like all sort of technological change, you kind of have to dive in. And I think we can all agree that the benefits are really, really there.
As the capitalist on the stage, I will also just note that as all of these productions continue to be demanded, and it's, again, I think it's great for everyone in the room and hopefully great for all of our investments, I do think there will be a requirement to do things more efficiently and more productively, and that's not to kind of cut the quality by any stretch, that's not to interfere with the art. It's just to make a lot of the stuff that's painful, takes time and resources, and it takes it off to the side and allows you to reemploy that in a more effective way. So I think eventually there'll be business pressures, even for the most stalwart folks who don't want to kind of change the way it's been always done. I think eventually there'll be a financial incentive to do that as well.
Years ago, I was involved in some stuff, but so what's really the use case? So you show a use case where you change night to day on a script, but usually something like that happens because the director goes, God, this is not going to work, and he calls together some people, they make a decision, somehow that gets turned into a script. So what's really the use case where your stuff would fit into that? I mean, you know, might be a nighttime scene in the subways of New York with crappy looking lights because we forgot to change the lights. Something like that, right? And they turn that into a feature. How do you work in that modality?
So I think, you know, what we're really, first of all, we're taking a very simplistic example. So, as we're starting out in baby steps, you know, one of the first things we can do is really just improve communication and improve the process of communication in production through that level of efficiency. So it's not so much, you know, right now, and what we were trying to get across in that example, it's not so much about you know, affecting your decision to change that scene from day to night to begin with. It's more about how that decision affects others in the entirety of the process. You know, I think we will get to a point where it will help to inform the initial creative decision, at least from a budget and schedule perspective. But this is really about communication and informing people and ultimately making sure that you know, we're using tools that allow people to be informed about the data that's relevant to them and make effective decisions and make quicker decisions based on that data.
So would that be like a PA walking around with the director, and the director going, I want to do this, or making a bunch of changes, and that somehow getting recorded and distributed automatically?
Yes.
Do you do that now?
We're in the process of digitizing that process.
Yeah, so I mean, the script change example was part of Guillaume's talk where he was saying this is where it's going. The technology actually exists for that today. It really does. I mean, like the ability to make real-time sort of decisions based on changes in data. I mean, that's pretty much, I mean, any of us who use Google Maps or Waze or something like that, that's exactly what's going on there. Sort of like, hey, there's a change in the environment, you should go left instead of right. That technology, you know, Guillaume had a page up there of, you know, you know, the different types of machine learning. That stuff does exist, and that's absolutely where we're going as a company with solutions like that. But in part of what we're trying to do here is to get us all to realize that a production is a set of data that is underlying it, and there's a whole bunch of business processes and applications that can leverage that data. And if we start digitizing that now, that's sort of like our provocation, our call to action for everyone, let's start thinking about this as a digital process, then we will all find ourselves in a much more efficient place where there aren't people running around because you changed something from day to night or something like that. I think that's what the future of production looks like if we all work towards that. Does that answer your question?
So I would assume all the companies would have different processes, so this would be a custom solution for each one of them, or this is something of a product that you're building or you're envisioning?
I think what we're trying to do here is actually build a holistic product, a general product. And I think one of the not only have we fallen into a couple of traps in this industry. This is where I'm going to get on my bully pulpit. So one of those traps is that the reverence of the creative process, which we do need to make more efficient, and every time we've made it more efficient, we've actually benefited the creative process by giving time to it. The other great misconception and sort of myth we perpetuated is that every production is so unique. And when you really take a step back and you look at sort of a 10,000 foot view, you start to realize all of the similarities between all productions. So in other words, you're trying to build a tool that A, is not customized by us, but is customized by the client themselves. And to a degree, what we're trying to do is tap what we're calling the entertainment cloud and production intelligence, so that tool learns itself how that production functions. So that's the key to this, is that we're building software products that learn the behavior of an individual production without our customization or without direct customization of the client.
I think it also depends on which sub-process we're talking about, but I absolutely will echo what Guillaume just said about we need to think about this from a sort of a software application perspective. And so two of the products that Guillaume mentioned are Start Plus, which is digital onboarding, digital start paperwork process, paperwork. Hours Plus, digital time tracking. Those require minor customizations, you know what I mean? That's an example of a templated application, which is an extreme example of what Guillaume just said about, like, most productions are kind of similar in that regard. So it needs to be configured slightly different for different types of production.
Basically, you're envisioning a SaaS-based platform with machine learning capability at the end of the day. So how far are you guys from?
Precisely. I mean, I feel like we're on things like the digital start and the digital time tracking, I think we're quite there. On the machine learning stuff, we have several products in development right now. You'll be hearing about them at events like this, not too long, that absolutely have machine learning applications in it that really, you'll see us really starting to go down this path. So, yeah.
This question of machine learning, I've been talking with security models that use machine learning to predict behavior and sort of say, oh, that person is not the person that said they are, the behavior's not right. But as soon as I start talking about the scale of our data sets, which is a film crew and the person's actually only working for 2 days, so there's no time to create a pattern. They're only new. They start saying, oh, no, but you know, we can't find you. How do you see your machine learning? I mean, I'm interested in the machine learning side because the production is so short term in machine learning cycle. How do you see that working?
So cast and crew is in a unique position. And that's, I think, one of the things that allows us to be so objective. It's because we see hundreds of productions every year. And so much to my previous point, we can actually see the patterns between productions. So if you're doing a two-day commercial, we can still use other productions that we've done as a model for that. And we can actually be relatively accurate with those predictions based on that. So I think that's when, you know, you're a company like Cast & Crew, you have that, like I said, that unique position of seeing hundreds of productions over and over and over again and being able to model on top of that. So it really doesn't matter, you know, if you're doing a two-day shoot and you're onboarding 150 people, we can still, like I said, we can still model on top of that. We can still do security and predictive analytics on top of that. So, you know, that's the advantage of sort of being the third-party provider that sees it all.
Right, but are you then anonymizing somehow that data, so you're not cross-pollinating?
Yeah, absolutely. We always anonymize all that machine learning data. It's never in correlation to a studio or project, even to the point of you know, we abstract specific terms, you know, in terms of natural language and so forth and so on, and we're really just abstracting that into the metadata about the pattern itself.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.